Shischa in the Parsha. We have a couple of very interesting ideas from the Sfas Emes. One idea is really about the Sfas Emes, and the other idea is quoted by the Sfas Emes. So neither are really the Sfas Emes' Torahs, but we know them because of the Sfas Emes. Who was the Sfas Emes? Anyone know the Sfas Emes' name?
Yeah, Alter.
Alter. His last name was Alter, that's right. It's not a nickname, that's his actual last name.
No, that's his last name.
Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh Leib.
Yeah.
And his father passed away when he was very young, maybe 6 years old, and he was raised by the Chiddush HaRim, Rabbi Yitzchak Meir Alter. Really the first Rebbe of Ger. Sfas Emes is technically the third Rebbe of Ger. There was a short period of time where someone else took over while Sfas Emes was probably a little too young and didn't want to take it, wanted to defer to this person. But Sfas Emes is understood to be the second Rebbe of the Ger Hasidus. And of course, because he learns everything from his grandfather, Chiddush HaRim. So he himself, the Chiddush HaRim, was a Talmud of the Rav Simcha Bonham of Pshischa. And tonight we're going to read from Rav Simcha Bonham of Pshischa through the Sfas Emes. I'm not sure if the Sfas Emes ever heard directly from Rav Simcha Bonham, but I believe I read once that he met the Katzke Rebbe when he was very young. Chiddush HaRim brought him to see the Katzke Rebbe. Of course, Katzke Rebbe being another one of the Talmidim of Rav Simcha Bonham of Pshischa. But enough about history, let's look a little bit at the Parsha.
Okay, what Europe are we talking about?
Oh, today? We're talking about Pshischa. You know where Pshischa is?
It's in Poland.
Okay, it's in Poland.
Okay.
You can still visit Gor. I don't think I've ever been to Pshischa. Some people have had the opportunity to go to Pshischa. Little trip to Pshischa. I don't know if there's much to chew on there. Okay, we can take a trip to Warsaw. Yeah. But if you saw the name in Polish, you wouldn't necessarily recognize it. It's got a bunch of different letters with an R and a Z and a Y and a bunch of... Yeah. And there isn't there R after the P? Prishasus? I don't know. In Hebrew, it's spelled with a resh. Parshuscha. But either way. So when it comes to this week's Parsha, one of the most interesting episodes, they're all interesting in their own way, but the one of the interesting episodes is the episode of Gad and Reuven, right? The Shvatim who wanted to stay in the Eber HaYarden. They didn't want to cross over. Somewhat of a troubling statement. I spoke about it more in depth on Tuesday, with the women's class. But when it comes to this episode, so they ask for that piece of land specifically because it has a greater pasture for their flock. And as the Parsha starts, they had tons of cattle. But Rav Simcha Bonham of Pshischa says that's not the only thing it means. Mikne is typically understood to be cattle, but it could also be something else. To acquire, like a kinyan. Right? There's a Sefer HaMakne, right? Famous for his Chidushim on Kiddushin. But Mikne Rav could also be understood to be the acquisition of a Rav. The acquisition of a rabbi. What does that mean? It says the Sfas Emes, quoting from Rav Simcha Bonham, Kinyan haya lehem b'rabam, devuka haya ma'od b'moshe rabbeinu, v'lachein sha'afu lishtakeh ba'aretz shaban nishar rabam. I'll translate that as we go. If you look at the pshat of the Parsha, it looks as if God and Reuven don't get along with Moshe Rabbeinu. It looks as if God and Reuven come to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, I know you've been working so long to get us into the land that's right over there, that we can see with our own eyes. I know it's been 40 years, and you've been upset that we've taken so long, and now you're upset you can't go into the land. But guess what? We willingly don't want to go into the land. I know you've been working so hard, and you would give up everything just to go into that land, but we're telling you, we don't even want to give anything up. We want to stay here. We would give up everything to stay here, not to go there. And you can imagine Moshe Rabbeinu's frustration in such a claim, with such a request, right? Moshe Rabbeinu has been so, you know, dead set, and he says to them, first of all, you're not going to go out to war with your brother. Second of all, don't you remember what your Zaidi told you about the spies? 40 years ago when they tried this, they said, we're not going into that land. And God said, yeah, now you're all going to die. And now you're thinking that you're going to make the same decision that they made. Yeah.
Aren't we doing that today?
Maybe. We'll talk about that at a different time. But you have a good point, and I would strongly encourage you to listen to my Tuesday class. It's not explicit, but it does have an answer in there. But when it comes to this conversation, Moshe Rabbeinu gets upset. They go back and forth, and ultimately he acquiesces. As long as they're going to go into the land to fight the wars, they can stay in that land. Basically saying, yeah, you can be like the spies. And while it's true, there seems to be some tension. Rav Simcha Banim understands it differently. In great Hasidic fashion, he flips the entire thing on its head and says that the reason they're having this conversation in the first place is because they had such a great relationship with Moshe Rabbeinu. As we said before, can you imagine coming to Moshe Rabbeinu after what the spies did and saying to him, we want to do exactly the same? Can you imagine the chutzpah? So it must be, says Rav Simcha Banim, that they had a really good relationship with Moshe Rabbeinu. It must be that they could trust him, that he wasn't going to freak out at them. Because, how do we know? Mikne Rav Haya. Mikne Rav, they had acquired for themselves a Rebbe. Mikne, an acquisition, Rav, like Rav, whoever. Rav, Moshe, Rabbeinu. They had acquired for themselves a Rebbe. Mikne Rav Haya Levnei Ruvein Levnei Gado Legad Atzim Me'od. He was a great Rebbe. It wasn't just that he was their Rebbe. And then they approach Moshe Rabbeinu to ask him for that. And it must be because they don't really, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't go to Hashem and say, these people are terrible, let's wipe them out. Right? He doesn't say that. He doesn't break any luchos. He doesn't, he goes back and forth with Hashem. But it's a conversation and ultimately he acquiesces. That's the sign of a great Rebbe. That you can have a conversation. It might be a difficult conversation, but you're comfortable enough to challenge each other. And in the end, find a resolution. That the Rebbe says, fine, you can stay over here. Moshe Rabbeinu says, fine, you can stay on this side, but come help the Jewish people. And they found a resolution. Why was it that they wanted this place? So, according to the Pshat, because they had cattle. But according to Rav Simcha Banim, we're not talking about cattle. At least on a deeper level, we're talking about Mikne as in terms of an acquisition. So Mikne Rav must be that there's something keeping them on that side of the land, which has to do with that mikne of the Rav, with that acquisition of the Rebbe. So what is that? They know Moshe Rabbeinu already was told he's not going into Eretz Yisrael. Where is he going to be? He's going to be on that side of the land. They say, we want to be with you. We want to stay here. Wherever you go, I go. It's an interesting connection to this. In the history of Pshischa, I told you this, the wedding of Ostiel. That when it came to going to this wedding, so Rav Simcha Banim didn't go, even though Pshischa was being put on trial. Why didn't he go? You remember? I think I said this the first week. Who stopped him from going? Rav Menachem Mendel Morgenstern, the Kutzker Rebbe, laid down in the street in front of the wagon, and he said, you're not going unless I go with you. And Rav Simcha Banim said, okay, I guess I'm not going. Because he didn't want the Kutzker Rebbe to go for different reasons. He was a little too sharp, he was abrasive, he wasn't going to do the job properly. Different ways of understanding it. But that was the Kutzker Rebbe's taina. Wherever you go, we want to go with you. So if you're going to stay here, I'm going to stay here too. And that's what God and Reuven are saying also in this situation. If you're going to stay here, Moshe Rabbeinu, we also want to stay here. It's a fascinating read. It flips the whole thing on its head. Whereas it seems like there's friction between Moshe Rabbeinu and God and Reuven, in the end there's a kesher, which can't be broken. I want to point out one interesting nuance to this, which is a Mishnah in Avos that we say early on in Avos. So we say, what do we say about getting a Rebbe? Asei lecha rav and kenei lecha chaver. That's interesting. What is it here? It's not asiya rav, but it's mikne rav. They mix the two. Maybe, and this is my own thing, you can take it or leave it. It's not worth much. But Mikne Rav, they had a connection to Moshe Rabbeinu that was the status of a chaver. Right? They were Mikne Rav, Kenei Lecha Chaver, but for them it was also Kenei Lecha Rav. That just like with a friend, you can have that certain comfort level, they too had that comfort level of a chaver with the Rav. So it wasn't just like, Asei Lecha Rav, okay, he's the guy I call up with Shilas. No, he's the one that I talk to about the most important things in my life. That's what it means. That was Mikne Rav. They were Kone Arav. Whereas most people are kone achaver, and they're ase l'charav, Gad and Reuven were kone l'charav. Yeah.
Did they not realize that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't going to remain alive?
Yeah, they wanted to keep his chus in their portion, even after he was being buried. They knew he was going to die, yeah. And this is a bit of a Hasidish thing. Obviously, you know the minhagim of Hasidim to visit Kvarim and, you know, try to be mishtativ in the schuyos and things like that. But that's what God and Reuven really wanted. They wanted to be close to their Rebbe. I'd never heard this. The truth is, I was going to speak about something else, but in the move, I lost something in my svarim in the shuffle, and I found this piece from the Sfasemis. I was blown away that he said such a thing from the Simcha Banim. But that's piece number one, quoting from the Sfasemis, quoting from Simcha Banim, that it was a certain connection they had with Moshe Rabbeinu. Similarly, working in the same vein, there's a story about the Sfasemis. And I saw this actually in a few places. Where did I see it? I don't remember. Probably the other sefer that I lost. Chasidim Misaprim al Bas Vasemes. I'm quoting now from the Mayana Shel Torah, which is a compilation sefer. It has some Chasidim Shavarlach, a lot of Chasidim Shavarlach. But I had seen this in others from too. So the Chasidim say the following story. Kibiyoso Yelad Lamad Pam Im Chavera Kol Alayl Basmada. One night, the Sfasemis, as he oftentimes did, learned all night. Okay, I won't keep you too long, but he learned all night. The Sfasemis only went to sleep in the wee hours of the morning, and he got up, you know, after daybreak, a little late. So what happened? His grandfather comes into the room. And he sees, who's his grandfather? Chiddush Harim comes into the room. Sees v'heitiv lo sha arucha, divrich tochach lo musar. I don't know if that's a literal word, sha arucha, but it was a long hour. It was a long hour of rebuke and musar. Al asher hu marbe b'sheina v'enu mashkim lakum lil motor. He didn't get up early like he usually does to learn Torah. Hasfasem ezal hikshiv lo divri ha-musar hakashim b'tesum eslev. He never once tried to stop the Chiddush Harim and tell him why he was waking up late. His friend that was there was dumbfounded, and he said, why didn't you tell your grandfather that you were up all night learning? That's why you were waking up a little later. Heishiv lo abas vasemes. Lo ratzisi lahavsik asaba be'emtza dvarav laman eshma mipiv o divrei musar. I wanted to hear him give me musar. I never have the opportunity. My grandfather rarely gives me musar. I wanted to hear it from him. God and Reuven come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, can we stay here? Moshe Rabbeinu says, what are you going to do? You're not going to go into the war. They should have stopped him right there. He said, no, we're going to go in for the war. And yet, what do? They let Moshe Rabbeinu go into this entire diatribe about you're not going to go into the war, and you're not going to do like this, you're being like the spies, don't you remember what your forefathers did? Don't you remember that they didn't help your other brother? This whole Al-Richus, they could have just stopped him in the first sentence and said, no, we're going into Eretz Yisrael to fight the wars. We intended that all along. In the end, that's what they said to him. We always wanted to go and fight the wars. And yet, they continue to listen. You are assuming the sinful culture of the spies. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says to them. He says, you're being sinners. And they still don't stop him. They listen to all. The end of Moshe Rabbeinu, the clincher, is you are destroying your brothers. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says to God in Reuven. You're destroying your brothers, and they just sit there and take it. Ela einzos ki im chevel haya lahem lahafsik es Moshe Rabbam ki ratzu lahosiv lishma minu divrei musar. They wanted to hear as much as they could from Moshe Rabbeinu. In the same vein as we were saying before, Gad and Reuven had this kesher with Moshe Rabbeinu. They wanted to hear as much as they could from him. They knew he was going away soon. They wanted to grab onto whatever they could. And even if it might have been negative towards them, they didn't want to stop anything. They didn't want to stop him even for a moment. It's interesting that there's a story they say about the Gra. At this point in history, with the Hasidus of Pshischa, so Hasidim were already starting to get a little bit warmer to the Misnagdim were already starting to get a little warmed up to the Hasidim. But similar story they say about the Vilna Gaon. One time, the Dubna Magid came to town. Anyone know the Dubna Magid? Mm-hmm. The name was of David Krantz. Is that true? Rav Yaakov Krantz, that's what it is. Good, Shkayach, thank you. Rav Yaakov Krantz, the Dubna Magid, even though the Magid of Meserich sort of co-opted the term Magid for the Hasidic lore, the Dubna Magid was the old school Magid, which was just a Rebbe that would go around and give mussar to people. And the Dubna Magid would go around, and one time he came to Vilna, and he's giving these fiery speeches, and he's talking to everybody, giving them mussar, and the end of Shabbos rolls around, and someone tells the Dibna Magid, the Vilna Gaon is very upset with you. You have to go see him right at the Dibna Magid. The Vilna Gaon, the Gra, is upset with me. What did I possibly do? I can't believe it. Oh my gosh. He runs over to the Vilna Gaon. He says, Vilna Gaon. I don't know what he said. Rav Eliyahu. He says, Rav Kramer. Maybe he called him Kramer. Why are you so upset? Someone told me that you're upset at me. And the Vilna Gaon says, you spent all Shabbos here giving mussar to everybody, but you never gave any mussar to me. You never gave me any mussar. The Vilna Gaon's like, you're the Vilna Gaon. Like, what am I supposed to say that you couldn't, you know? So the Vilna Gaon says, I want some mussar. Give me some mussar. So the end of the story, that's the point that I wanted to bring in for the story, but the end of the story is that the Vilna Gaon tells him, you think it's such a kunz to be a Gaon in Vilna? Go somewhere else. Go speak to the common people. Go live amongst the countrymen. And then be a Gaon. That was the muster he gave to the Vilna Gaon. It's no big kunz to be a Gaon in Vilna. That's what Dibna Magid said to the Vilna Gaon. I mean, he asked for it. Right? But that's the story of Gad and Reuven who come to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they could have easily stopped him in his tracks. They could have cut out an entire parak from the Chumash. Just said, no, we don't, we're going to go into Eretz Yisrael. No. They let themselves have it, right? They let Moshe Rabbeinu give it to him. And in much the same way we saw from the first idea, they were miknerav. They wanted a Rebbe that could give them the fire and brimstone. It's not really the mahalach nowadays, but there's a certain semblance of that we should hold on to, which is that sometimes if someone who is a Rebbe, not necessarily a Rav, but a Rebbe in a certain character trait, right? There are different people have different, you know, chalakim, different chaleks in midos. You know, I once heard this from a Rebbe that if you're trying to perfect a midah, you're trying to become better in one area. So find a Rebbe in that area. It doesn't have to be someone with smicha. Find someone, if you have a problem with kas, find someone who you notice never gets upset or never gets too upset, never screams. You have a problem with modesty, you're too egotistical, find a Rebbe someone who's very good at being modest. So we can all sort of learn from Gad and Reuven, who are miknerav, they wanted to be as close to Moshe Rabbeinu as possible, even when it came to giving them mussar. Even when it came to Moshe Rabbeinu telling them something which might not have been warranted. So we should all, Mirta Hashem, create chaverim, k'nei lecha chaver, but also asei lecha rav, much like the Shatim of Gad and Reuven come here. They had a chaver who was a rav. They had someone that could give them mussar, and that they wanted to take as much of it as they could. So Mirtz Hashem, would you take that with us as we go forward in the 9 days and just get better and better in our own Avodas Hashem in whatever area we need help in. Shkayach. Have a good Shabbos.